Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
Welcome to the Bag Pod, everyone. We've got the entire crew back this week. We've got Alan, Jimmy TV, and Joe Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Hey.
It's nice to be reunited again. We will, of course, be talking our usual Mad Men and Game of Thrones this week. So let's hop into the Game of Thrones. We opened up, first shot of the episode. They clearly didn't want to build any more tension than they did last week when Dagmar rode Theon to his galleon, I suppose, and hinted at what they could possibly do. Unfortunately, we did not get to see the battle as, you know, is a custom of HBO dramas where they cut out all the good stuff.
I'm not even sure if there was a battle in the book.
I feel like there was something.
I mean, I'm sure there was at least a little bit of fighting, but I feel like even in the book, he just kind of rides up on during the middle of the night with like his 15 people or whatever,
yeah,
and just kind of
the walls.
It seemed like a relatively peaceful takeover.
Yeah, right. It was a nice transition.
Yeah, because there's no one there.
Yeah,
there's your rolled up there.
We are of course talking about Theon taking over Winterfell. Bran yielding, of course. I don't know what. I mean, it wasn't. I guess the thing to take away from that scene would be the continuous hacking of Sir Roderick's head
and a kick.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't forget that kick.
He stomped it off at the very end. I think it brings up an interesting point. Whereas we talked about this last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I'm not quite sure. Where the Lady Talisa, the nurse that Rob finds on the field of battle, asks Rob where what his plans are after the war, you know, to sort of bring peace back, or to what his ruling plans are, I suppose. And I think Theon here definitely could have, Theon could definitely have used such a speech before he decided to take over Winterfell.
As in, he didn't really know what he was going to do with it after he got it?
Yeah. Basically, he just knew he wanted it. And
right.
And now he's just kind of trapped there. And I mean, I assume he's trying to rule, but, I mean, you know, it's hard to rule people that don't want to be ruled by you.
I mean, let's just put it this way. At the end of the episode, his two most important captors escaped.
Yeah.
So he's obviously not doing a great job.
Exactly.
He got a good job from OSHA.
Hey,
you got him.
She taught him many things.
Savage things.
Her face is always crazy.
Like, yeah.
She's got this crazy look about her. I don't know if I'd accept her into my bed. She was looking at me like that.
Yeah, look, she'd bite something off.
Yeah.
I was, I shouldn't ever be shocked when we see a girl naked on that show, but I wasn't expecting her to have that body. I guess they just, every woman who gets hired on that show, they just let them know, like, you're going to get butt-ass naked at some point, just so you know.
Pretty much.
Out there.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for Sansa to reach the age of maturation.
Hey.
Yeah, but no, everyone basically gets naked up in that piece. So, that's all the time. You can never go wrong with some titties. That's what I always say.
Game of Bone.
Mmm. Alan is on top of his game right there.
That's in-the-bag with two G's.
So Winterfell is taken. Bran yields. And then, of course, we get Rob towards the end of the episode getting mad about
someone,
that.
Someone's smoke alarm going off?
Yeah, it appears my apartment's on fire.
Excellent.
Hey, I'm going to go check that out.
All right, you do that. We'll continue to pod.
We're just going to keep podding, yeah.
Don't even worry about it.
Just yell out if something's wrong, and we'll try to call the authorities.
In any case, we get Rob being told, being informed, after Caitlin comes back, by Mr. Bruce Bolton about Winterfell's fall.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Roose.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they didn't reintroduce him.
Because they're assuming that we know who he is.
I guess so.
Well, they introduced himself in the last episode.
Did they?
Right?
Yeah, they did. But I assume Bagman thought that he wanted us to for him to be doubly introduced so that we really knew who he was.
I mean, it could help. It wouldn't hurt.
kind of like how many introductions does Davos's Knuckles need?
Right.
You know,
I'm back. He got
three or four. You can at least give Roose one or two. Or two, yeah. Is that what you're saying?
That's true. I mean, I can safely say that if I had not read the books.
Did Alan recognize the guy?
Which guy? Which guy?
The guy that gives Rob the bad news at the end about Winterfell.
Guy who gives Rob the bad news. The guy who brings the note?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, who is that?
That is Roose Bolton.
Oh, of course. No, remind me.
He is the Lord of House Bolton, the Flayed Men.
The Dreadfort.
Yeah, we haven't gotten a lot of Roose. I mean, he's come up.
He popped up in the last episode, and he got a small little introduction. But Bagman was lamenting the fact that he didn't get another introduction.
I mean, I could safely say that had I not read the books, I would not have known that was Roose Bolton.
I did not know who that was. That was just some guy.
Exactly.
My favorite thing that's been said so far in this podcast was, how many introductions does Davos's Knuckles need?
I'm glad you were here for that. He needs at least two more, I can tell you that right now.
Just his knuckles.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially since they've been missing, you know?
We haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, so they're going to need to be reintroduced.
Exactly.
Sure.
When they come out of that pouch.
Speaking of reintroductions, I wanted to say that it's clear Lady Caitlin comes back, which happens way before she does in the books, to make sure to remind Rob of his sworn fealty, his sworn honor, I suppose, to A. Frey.
I mean, you can get right down to it. She was definitely cock-blocking your son.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she cock-blocked the shit out of him and smiled about it, too. She knew what she was doing.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, I'm going to cock-block the shit out of Rob right now.
To this common field nurse.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, is there going to be a relationship between Lady Talisa, or do you think that's just sort of setting up?
I think this is obviously who we think it is.
Okay.
He's gonna get down and dirty.
Exactly.
Because Lady Cat's, she's got to go off and do something. She's got to go ruin someone else's day somewhere eventually, doesn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she likes to fuck up all over Westeros, so she can't just be in one camp for too long.
No.
True. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where she goes from here, considering she never went. I'm correct in saying that she didn't reunite with Rob until the third book, right?
I think it happens. Actually, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But obviously with Lady Catelyn and the camp, we also have Breen in the camp, Brienne.
Yes.
Up in that camp.
Who looked much taller than Rob did.
Yeah, dude, she's a tower.
She is quite a beast, that woman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we've got that's what's going on in Rob's camp. I was disappointed we didn't get we got a little, I suppose, but we could have used some more yelling of King of the North.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Everyone is bold.
Yeah, we just got a lot of your graces, but I mean, we definitely could have used some King of the North. If nothing else, just to switch it up a little bit.
Exactly. You can never get enough of the King of the North.
No, that's definitely true.
Never.
Speaking of kings, though, we'll go to King's Landing, where we get Joff. He makes his triumphant return.
Yeah, he'd been. I was saying right before we saw him that we hadn't seen him in a couple episodes.
Yeah, it had been a little time, and he is somehow they make him more dickish in each progressive episode. I don't know how they do it, but he just becomes more and more hateable.
Yeah, I mean, when he's making fun of Tommen for, or being pissed off at Tommen for crying.
Yeah.
And then Sansa's like, oh, you know, well, my little brother cried when I left. And then he's like, well, he's not a prince or whatever. And then he just goes, well, it isn't really relevant, then, is it? With just such contempt in his voice. It is just spot on. Well done.
He is such an asshole. It's so ridiculous. It is so ridiculous. And then, of course, we had Cersei and Tyrion, again, hating on each other. Cersei really giving him the what for there about him loving something so much and then her taking it away.
Yep.
Which was, I mean, she was pissed.
Yeah.
She was really, really pissed. Which was, of course, good to see.
I was a little surprised as I realized, I think last episode, that he actually intended on sending her daughter off. But I thought that he originally just set that up, that I think it's called like the canary game, where he told each of them a different thing. I thought it was just to find out who he could trust and who he couldn't.
It was both. I mean, he's sending her off for her protection as well as to, of course, become, I guess, better friends, if you will, stronger allies with the Martells.
Right. Yeah, and
which
I haven't met any of yet. I got that he was doing that. I was surprised at first when I realized that he had dual motives there. I thought he was making that up at first solely to find out who was a snitch.
Yeah.
They threw that cow pie at Joffrey's head. At first I thought it was a rock and I was really happy, but then when I realized that it was soft and he was okay, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Well, I know what we can do here. Now that Joffrey is back, we can bring back the best segment of the podcast, perhaps, in how does Alan want to see Joffrey die this week?
Well, I believe I will go... I'll go with Marvel angle, since we just had the Avengers come out this weekend. I would like for Spider-Man to put his wrist in his mouth and shoot his webbing down his throat until it fills him up.
My goodness.
Oh, God.
That is just cruel. That is cruel and unusual.
That's the definition of cruel and unusual.
I'm kind of worried about you right now.
Maybe we should send someone over there. There's obviously some fumes up in that piece.
Yeah.
His house is burning down, but he's sticking with the pod.
His house is burning down, but he just kept talking about how much he wanted to see Joffrey die.
those were his last moments on this earth, and I think he died a happy man. We'll have to wait for Joe. So
some other stuff that we've kind of already talked about is he pops up a couple times. We had some scenes with Rickon. That's always nice, right?
Yeah, Rickon. Yeah, he's there.
We see the fifth Stark.
He does nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. Not now, not ever.
Exactly. So far, so good on Rickon. I guess what? They stole away in the night as well.
They did indeed.
After Osha decided to use her womanly wiles to distract and kill.
And then they were into the Godswood.
Yes, they disappeared. What did you think of the direwolves there coming out of the Winterfell, the castle, the keep?
They look pretty good, I thought, this week. Yeah, them and then Ghost.
They were a little shiny, but they looked good. They were moving. They looked good when they were moving.
Yeah, I feel like besides Ghost, they kind of look crappy. But as long as we don't see too much of the gray ones, I think we're good.
So the gray one would be Summer, I believe, right?
Well, the ones that aren't white, basically, is what I'm
saying. Yes.
All of the other ones. I thought Snow looked pretty good, especially with him kind of stalking around on top of the mountain there. I thought that was pretty cool.
Indeed.
There were some great visuals up in the north this week as well.
Yeah. There was also one of the worst chase scenes of all time.
Yeah, no, okay. We'll talk about that. That chase scene. But first off, Alan, what did you think of that entire thing? The finding the wildlings, And then that scene, and then what happens?
I was happy first when we saw it because I like that actress. She's on Downton Abbey.
Oh,
and
she is on Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
You mean Downtown Abbey?
Yes.
I do not. You mean Downtown Arby's?
Yes, yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
But it was a little. You know, it's one of those situations that felt a little forced in the fact that it was such a terrible idea to ever just, like, leave one of your guys alone with the prisoner. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like one of those scenes where the bad guy, you know, leaves the good guy with one henchman and is just like, take care of him quietly.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, the prisoner gets away. But then the silly sloppy chase was ridiculous. But then I liked their interaction when he catches her and she starts dry humping him.
Yes.
Backing up in it.
Yeah.
Do you think that John and Ygritte will end up finding Corrin and the other Black Brothers, or do you think they're just done?
I have no idea. I would assume that they're going to run into... My thought, like, story-wise, would be that they would run into another group of people. Mm-hmm. Like, he would see something that he wouldn't have otherwise seen, or discover something that he wouldn't otherwise have if he hadn't been separated from everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, to notify you, and to notify everyone that hasn't read the book, they actually changed that scene up a bit, quite a bit, in fact. I thought the scene was really good up until...
The chase
started happening.
Yeah.
And probably the reason why is because the chase doesn't happen anywhere in the book. Like, they just added that shit. Basically, what happens in the book is he lets
her go. They did, and when he caught her after the big chase, and she was like, you know, your Black Brothers are so far away. I mean, they weren't. I mean, they were probably 60 yards away, you know? It's not like they were running for hours and hours and hours.
It's not like the Black Brothers took off at a speed.
They didn't
like,
dip
John,
out on horses or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, that whole chase scene was just ridiculous and clunky.
What really kills it for me, and I rewatched it again, mm-hmm. is at one point, Jon Snow jumps off like this rock, and this rock's like 3 feet high, and he lands on the ground and just really stomps the landing, even like makes a little, sound and like drops it down to like his hands and then gets back up and starts running again, but it's just so bad.
Oh, it is really bad. That cross cut was awful. Like you said, he just kind of like hopped off of a rock and then all of a sudden they treated it like he just did like a 12-foot long jump.
Yeah.
With the landing.
Also, Ygritte didn't have the best running mechanics at times. Looked a little off.
I would have to say both of them were a little off in the whole running facet of athleticism.
It was a snowy mountain.
It was snowy, and this is something else I've thought about the past a few episodes, at least, actually, is doesn't it seem like the Night's Watch guys are a little overburdened with things? Don't you think they're carrying a little bit too much? Like, they always have these giant fucking packs on.
Plus, I mean, I'm thinking maybe some of that might just be, like, the furs, making it seem like they look a lot bigger than they are, you know?
Yeah.
Just because that's the nature of fur. But, yeah, I'd say definitely today, in this past episode, they definitely looked really overburdened, like they were carrying way too much shit. Especially since Corrin and John and those guys, they were going out ranging, you know? They weren't, like...
Running a little mission kind of thing. Not like they're going off to somewhere for months and months.
Yeah, exactly. They were doing, like, a little recon. They weren't, like, moving the camp forward or anything. So, yeah, that
maybe... Yeah, that's... But, you know, maybe it's like a... You know, they're out in the middle of nowhere. This isn't really a place where they can live off the land mm-hmm. kind of deal. But, yeah, I definitely noticed that they just had, like, so much stuff.
Yeah.
Very true.
It's a big-ass pack. And how about Corrin Halfhand giving John some shit? That was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, no, that was real good. I love the Halfhand.
Fucking with Jon Snow.
Yeah, it's great, man. He's awesome. He for some odd reason, he looks like Ben Kingsley. But... I love me some Corrin Halfhand. I'm all in on Halfhand.
Apparently.
Let's go...
Half-handed comment.
God, Alan, you were just on top of the game tonight, buddy.
Shoot me.
Let's go over to Carth here, where we had a couple of Danny scenes. The first
Spice King.
Yes, the Spice King. The first being the Spice King, and him looking a lot like Kyle Gass. First of all.
So, my immediate reaction was is that he's like a cross between a little bit of KG and a little bit of what's the dude in The Princess Bride who keeps going inconceivable?
Oh, Wallace Shawn.
Yeah, Wallace Shawn. Yeah, he's just so pompous. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
he's always kind of always like has his hands up and he's always gesturing or like pointing at something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has that like affected way of speaking.
Yeah.
He like preens down the stairs. And,
oh my god, it's so good! I can't get enough of him. I hope he keeps having scenes because he is phenomenal. I keep expecting them to just say "Good day, sir," like you know, and then turn and walk away, and then Dan to start saying something else, and then he's then I'm going, "I said good day, sir," and then walking away again, you know, shit like that.
Yeah, and his posse of slaves there. What was that?
Well, I guess just kind of follow his ass around.
That was kind of nuts. He definitely put Danny in her place, though.
Yeah, Danny is just as juvenile, I guess, in the books as she is, but it's definitely a little bit more jarring to see on screen.
I feel as though she wasn't as maybe forceful in the books. Like, she wasn't as tactful.
As whiny? As, like, whiny?
Yeah, exactly. Like, she didn't have the tact. I mean, like, they're doing a good job, like, translating her lack of tactfulness, but like her forcefulness and her like whininess and her like her just like this is what I need and you need to give it to me sort of stuff. I mean, maybe that was just because for most of that part she was always talking to Jorah, you know,
right?
For all that, so she was always a little more whiny towards Jorah, and when she was actually trying to get something,
yeah, she'd be smarter about it.
Yeah, exactly.
She'd go about it a much better way.
So, but so far she hasn't shown all that much growth. In the whole dealing with people realm.
No, I mean, her whole speech at the end was really juvenile.
I mean, she's really a lot like her brother. Like,
yeah, she is. No, she is, very much so, and like Theon too. Like, you know, her little speech about entitlement is just very, very, very Theon Greyjoy-esque.
Yes, good old Theon.
That's not someone you want to be compared to right
no,
now.
No, not at all.
No.
But yeah, and then at the end of the episode, we get her Zaro's mansion, I guess, pad getting destroyed. Or not destroyed, but all of the Dothraki, I guess, or most of them being killed.
Yeah.
And
slit.
The dragons being stolen.
Yep.
And then taken off to a tower.
I guess that's got to be. We gotta be led to believe that's the House of the Undying, right?
I mean, you gotta assume so. I don't know what else it could be.
Right.
Unless they added something else.
I mean, in the title sequence, they always do have, like, kind of a tower that comes up a little bit higher than everything else, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alan.
Yeah.
What do you think? How do you feel about these dragons being stolen?
I was upset, and I was thinking, like, tell me it's not gonna end right here. At first, when that situation happened, I thought, I just call him Tyler Perry.
Okay, that's good.
I thought he did that at first, because the timing of when they walked in and he was just like, what he was saying,
speech.
I always know what I'm doing, or like,
yeah,
something along those lines. I thought he was showing her all these bodies, and I was like, yes, he's going to forcefully take her.
Zaro will take his prize.
Tyler Perry is getting real right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But alas, I realized a few moments later he had nothing to do with it, or so I believe.
Yeah. What do you have any notions on what could be happening with these dragons?
I don't. Before this episode, what's the great guy? Daenerys's hand. Jorah. I was thinking in the last episode that I hoped that he wouldn't try to cause some situation, like frame. Okay, you gotta stick with me here. I thought that he was going to make it look like Daenerys' group fucked up, like stole something or caused some shit in Karth so that Tyler Perry would get killed because he kind of vouched on his life.
Wow.
That they would be good. Right. Yeah. And he was obviously very jealous of his proposal to her. So I was thinking before this episode that he might do something like that. But I don't know how this dragon stealing would have anything to do with that situation. I mean, Dinars has already caused more trouble in that city than I thought she was allowed to. Like, she keeps getting in fights with the guy that let her in.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see. There was a lot of talk, of course, in the book about how important the dragons really are and sort of like their economic worth, almost. Like, there's a lot of talk about Danny, between Danny and Jorah and Danny and, you know, whoever, about, like, you know, a dragon is worth, you know, basically they're saying dragons are priceless.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I feel like we haven't gotten a lot of that in the show. I guess we don't need too much.
Well, I feel like it's clear that they're worth in the sense of how people talk about them.
Yeah.
And then it's the only thing that makes her an opponent in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she doesn't have anything except the fact that the Dothraki...
The dragons, yeah.
Yeah, that she looks great naked, Dothraki are crazy, and then she's got the dragons.
Totally. Sorry I was gone for so long. But yeah, I don't understand why there wasn't more threats of the dragons being stolen in the books. I think it makes perfect sense that they got stolen. Because she's not even guarding them worth a damn. She's got them in those wooden crates.
It's true.
With her hand
and a nice wooden crate, and her dragons breathe fire. Way to go, Danny.
Yeah, good thinking there, Danny.
Well, I mean, I thought she always usually takes the dragons wherever, though, doesn't she? Like, whenever,
but I mean, like, why wouldn't
in the
like why didn't
stuff?
The why didn't the 13 or whoever that came up to greet her just smack her on the back of the head and take her dragons and kick her ass back out into the haunted red wasteland or whatever? You know what I'm saying?
Because those dudes would have slaughtered them.
Who?
Her dudes.
Her Khalasar or whatever?
I feel like she has a couple guys with her, and I think like two of those guys could take those 13 weird bitches.
I don't know, man. Chat Puri has got that trick where he can be different places at once.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. He pulls the Loki.
He puts one of those pretty little checks on you.
Mm. So, are you?
And also, maybe you already talked about this too, since I kind of came in halfway through. But I thought it was obvious that it was Zoros or whatever the dude's name is that stole the dragons, because he was like, "Yeah, he's like, I've done a lot of shit, and some of it ain't good." And then he
opens the door for Danny. Yeah.
What a Han Solo thing to say.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know. We don't know what that tower is that they were being brought to. We assume it's the House of the Undying, but we don't know. And it does that place does not look much like a house either.
Well, I always thought the House of the Undying was just like a barn. Like that's what I always imagined to be, just like one like kind of like ish looking room. Is that not what you guys always thought it looked like?
I thought it was like a huge
mansion. I always thought it was just like this one single, like kind of like the cabin in Lost.
Well, yeah, but I always also thought for some odd reason it was outside of the city or something.
Not, like, directly in it?
Yeah.
Alan, the dragons never get stolen in the book. In fact, like, never even get attempted to get stolen in the book. So that was a complete shock for us three.
I heard.
Also.
Yeah.
So you guys are feeling a little lost because you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, obviously not.
Yeah, they changed up a good amount of stuff from the book in this episode. So
what I'm kind of thinking maybe is they might use it as an opportunity to maybe have the dragons grow a little bit or something like that. Because I always thought the dragons had gotten bigger by this point.
Yeah, they haven't really
grown. I thought they were kind of ready to start doing some shit.
Mm-hmm.
I think she'll have them back in her possession by the end of the season.
I think they'll have them back in their possession by the end of the next episode.
No. This is definitely her seasonal plot.
You think?
This isn't going to be resolved next episode.
There's only a couple, like what, four episodes left? You think it'll go on a long time?
Yeah.
You think they'll?
I mean, I think
drag
they'll be.
On this plot?
Yeah, I mean, I think the next time we'll see her, she'll be she's talking to Jorah, and they'll probably just be questioning Jorah and other people in her. And her shit about what happened, and then we'll see the action in the ninth episode or something like that. But it was interesting that only one of her slave girls was there and dead.
Yeah, not the hot one that knows.
I was so afraid for a moment that it was the new high one. I guessed, and I was happy when I realized
it. And we know the hot one can handle the dragons pretty well, and that they like her. So
well,
that's what they keep saying around Karth.
Didn't she also send out
that's
the
one
hot
way
one?
Of putting it.
Didn't she also send out the hot one to sleep with someone in Karth?
Yeah, with
isn't that what
no,
she said she sent it to
Tyler Perry. She sent her to Tyler Perry.
Oh.
For the dress.
Oh, okay. What
Daniel's like Daniel's like, go make his dragon spit fire.
What I wanted to say about what I wanted to say about the whole dragon stealing thing is I think it's probably just their way of being able to condense a bunch of time in the book where Dany basically is just like searching for people to help her for a few chapters, and they didn't really want to put that and or didn't have enough time to put that in the series. So I think the stealing the dragons thing is just trying to move her along to get to the House of the Undying. It gives her like an actual reason to go, as opposed to just being freaked out by Pyat Pree telling her to come to his house.
It definitely makes a little bit more sense with how they've been in the book. I mean, in the show. In the book, they were always kind of open about it, and she's kind of wandering the city a bunch. Like, she's not on this short lease or anything like that. Mm. So it kind of makes sense for her to stumble on it a little bit. But so far, yeah, things have been so weird and shit like that. It almost seems like she needs a reason to. The things that I thought also along with the suspicion of that one slave girl was that worst case scenario they might use it as a thing to like not really show what happens in the book in the House of the Undying, mm-hmm. and they might make it more of like a siege for her to get her dragons back, where she'll never get drugged up. Well, she'll never get on shrooms and shit like that.
Well, I mean, we all know that they're not the greatest at doing trippy dream.
Right. No. I mean, I've always kind of dreaded how it's going to end up looking, because I feel like it's best case scenario. It looks like shit. I don't think there's a good way for them to be able to do it.
Well, I mean, she also had that, but she had that weird line in this show as well, in this episode, where she said something about my dreams always come true or something.
Yeah.
Which is, First off, we didn't know she was having dreams about hatching the dragons in the first place.
Yeah, and would definitely point to her towards us seeing more of her dreams, you would think.
Exactly, and especially her going to the House of the Undying and tripping balls.
And that other thing happened, my hope would be that maybe she looks for people that'll be more sympathetic to her before she goes to the house, before she tries to fight her dragons, and maybe gets on meets up with maybe Strong Belwas and Marston Whitebeard.
Yeah, that would be nice. It'd
be pretty sweet.
They'd be coming in a little earlier than they came in the book, but that'd be nice.
It would be.
But yeah, let's go back to what we were waiting for Jose for. King Joffrey, the riot in King's Landing, getting hit with some stool in the face. And that shit breaks loose. Shit happens. And Jose, the big question here is, of course, do you think one of those maidens next to Sansa was Lawless?
I thought for sure it would be, but none of them ever got ripped away. But there was like...
There's definitely, after Sansa gets saved, there's definitely a chubbier woman.
Yes.
Who starts getting tossed around by a couple of guys.
There is. Yeah. So that could have been Lollies.
We might have our Lollies.
For Alan and those of you who don't know, Lawless is basically one of Sansa's court maiden friends who's perhaps the most boring and stupid person in the entire book that's not
cool. I guess this is a semi-spoiler, but not really. All right, but so the book makes repeated references to this girl Lollies, who's described as being like a half wit or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's, yeah, or
like a simpleton, baby.
At best, half wit, if not worse.
Right, and she gets a train run on her at this scene, and I wasn't looking forward to that scene. I mean, no one's looking forward to that happening to anyone. But then they repeatedly refer to it through the book.
Yes,
and don't
and
forget
throughout,
old
throughout
Lollies.
The third book as well. Yeah, don't forget Lollies is preggers.
Yeah,
forget about that.
From getting gang raped that one time, and so I was just curious if they were gonna like even mention it or discuss it or.
Am I making this up? Did at some point during that riot scene, didn't Tyrion yell to someone, "Grab the half-wit"?
Oh shit!
No, I don't think so. I think he yelled for Sansa a couple times. I'm not sure if he ever yelled for the half.
I know at one point in the episode last night, someone yelled out, go grab the half-wit.
Maybe the half-wit?
No. It's half-wit.
No, no.
We're going to have to rewatch this then. That sounds that sounds like Lawless in a nutshell right there.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, so we instead of seeing Lawless get a train run on her in the streets of King's Landing, we almost see Sansa getting gang raped, and then her being saved by the Hound for, I believe this is the second time that he's helped her out, right? At least in the series.
Yeah, he kind of stopped her from making a fatal mistake earlier this season when she looked like she was going to push Joffrey off that bridge.
Yeah.
After he showed her dad's head. Mm. God, son of a bitch.
So, yeah, the Hound coming to the rescue, being a little... I mean, he does help Sansa out in the books, but he's definitely a little bit more...
He's a little bit more brusque with her, and he's also, in the books at least, and he's been drinking a bit at this point, too, in the books. And he's, it's not the most socially pleasant person to be around.
He's been hitting us.
But, I mean, the great thing about it, obviously, is, and we don't know quite as much about it, just because they can't go into so much detail in the show, is that Sansa obviously has this huge notion of knights being, you know, heroes, you know, kind of Disney-esque, you know, thing. And then this is her motherfucking prince, you know, this is her knight, is this guy who's half-scarred, disemboweling people.
And hates everyone.
And hates everyone.
Yeah. So, yeah, they make a good point of that. And then, of course, Tyrion literally punching Joffrey in the face.
Nah, it was open-handed.
I don't know about that, man. That looked like a punch to me.
I think it was open-handed. He has wee hands.
In any case, it was awesome, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was a good time.
And when those hungry peasants tore that one guy apart.
Yeah. They tore his arm off. I don't know what to say else about that.
There's some sound effects going on.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, that's. I mean, definitely. It sounded like they were gonna try to eat him, and then this kind of ripped his arm off. And it was like, oh god, what the hell?
Well, I didn't realize it took so little time to rip someone's arm off. Like,
yeah, they really got down to it.
5 seconds, it was just boom.
It was a team effort.
Yeah, it was.
Someone on there's got some strengths.
Yeah. One of those dudes who is bone thin has got some secret strength on there.
He's got some beer muscles or something.
Yeah.
He probably took the arm and then went to go look for Lawless.
Oh, my God.
But I think there's only, we've talked about everything except probably the best part of the episode for me, and becoming the best part of the show, really, are these interactions between Tywin and Arya.
I noticed that this episode, has Charles Dance always been on the credits, the main credit role, initially?
I think he has this season.
He has been this season? Okay. Because he was, and that was the first time I noticed it, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they whenever Arya and Tyrion are together, for some odd reason, they just click real well on screen, and they always have, they're always just acting the pants off of everything. And I don't know, I just really enjoy their backs and forths and their conversations and so forth.
Yeah, he is a great actor.
Yeah. And it was especially nice because Carchetti seemed to bring a little bit more to the table this time around, at least in the terms of not growling, as Arya hid her face from him, or tried to at least, and he was trying to, try to figure out who it was by looking at her a couple times. Yeah, I don't know. I always really like the Tywin and Arya scenes, so.
Yeah, that was great.
Nothing going on? You guys don't have anything to say?
Oh, what just happened?
Sometimes that dead air is so enjoyable. Yes, I enjoy very much, too. Obviously, he sees a little bit of himself in her. You know, kind of the... A little too smart... you know, for where they come from, much smarter, obviously, than the stools that he has to deal with on a day-to-day basis. You know, he kind of gets a kick out of her. I'm not sure why he opens up so much to her, to be honest with you, though, about, like, his father and stuff like that.
I thought that was interesting, too. But, I mean, I thought it was more jarring. I thought it was – well, no, I mean, I thought him associating with her was a lot more jarring last – or whenever he didn't whenever she was talking back to him than it was this time. But yeah, I was hoping they were going to get into Tywin's pops a little bit more, because there is a pretty good backstory there. But obviously,
we've got a little time,
crunch for time.
Yeah.
What we do, we don't get shit for a backstory as far as the TV show goes. So I don't think we're going to get anything there.
Well, There's no time.
I'm just saying we've got a few episodes and seasons left to get a little bit more on the Lannister grandfather.
On Tytos yes. Lannister. And the uncles.
Baelish. What?
I've given up on him. I've given up on Baelish.
Yeah, I mean, he's not great.
You think he left that note, Bax? I didn't think he left that note. I thought
he left the note.
It was where he was sitting.
It was just, I thought it was just some,
I thought it was just like a update on what Rob, I thought it was the
battle plan.
A note sent by whoever the person in Rob's camp that's spying.
I thought someone's got to freeze frame it. I thought it was just like battle plans. Like, look, we're going to go attack Rob here with this many men.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I just felt that, like, because he was looking at her real hard and then they cut away. So I felt as though that was a note that he left her.
Well,
that'd be
note,
the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Because we never.
Why is he going to leave her a note on Tywin's table?
I don't know. But in the book, Baelish never runs into Arya.
Right. Well, I was just going to say that the note, I could see it was some sort of update on what the troop movement was going to be. But I was at first thinking that he left it there intentionally, because it looked like he recognized her. And I was thinking that what if he had left it there intentionally?
Just so that she could be updated on what's going on.
Or to screw her.
Or that as well.
Who knows? Man, I'm always digging too deep into people's motives on this show, because I have no idea what anyone is planning.
That's kind of how Georgie Porgy likes doing things.
It's a real Game of Thrones.
Oh, man.
Man, let's just shut this pod down right now. That was too good. But then, of course, we get the death of Sir Amory Lorch at the end as he busts in to Tywin's chambers and immediately dies.
He's a ripe old
dart to the neck. He got a fucking dart in his neck.
You got a fucking dart in your neck. That was it was a great scene. The way they showed that, and her finding what's his name, the guy who talks like Yoda.
Jack Winnicar.
A girl can't tell a man when to do a thing. Great line.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know. Other than that, I think we have is there anything else that anyone wants to bring up before we shut down Game of Thrones for a week?
Joe, you pretty much missed everything else. Did you have anything else to add?
No, not really. Yeah, you guys talked about North of the Wall and all that whatnot. All right, well, I'll just listen to it on the pod.
Okay.
That sweet, sweet chase scene?
I was fine with it. I was fine with everything they did up there. Yeah.
I think you're not.
And I really got a chuckle out of Ygritte cozying up to Snow.
Oh yeah. I mean, who didn't enjoy that? There was one other thing in there. At one point, Corrin calls the wildlings goat fuckers, which I laughed out loud at.
Oh, I missed that.
after he's been jabbing with Jon Snow a bunch, he says something like, "Let's go find these goat fuckers," or something.
Nice.
I thought that was delightful. Other than Jon Snow stomping that 2-foot landing during the chasing, those were my two big laughs of the episode, I think.
Right.
Do we wish that the episodes had more of an episodic feel, or do we like the fact that it's clear that they're just building up things? Do you know what I'm saying? Like it never really feels like a singular episode is like its own. Is its own entity, really. Well, it's just continuing to build up the story and everything.
Isn't that how season one was, too?
Yeah, I'm just saying in general, in the show.
I like it this way because, there's enough TV that feels that way, and especially if you're taking something that's like a book, I would rather have this feeling of watching an ongoing story. You know, the episodes kind of feel like episodes of The Wire, where it's not really, they're episodic in theme, but like what happens in the in each episode, you're just like seeing another chapter of mm-hmm. something greater. Mm-hmm. I think it sets the show apart from a lot of other TV.
Yeah, I think it works well, and honestly, I'm not sure how they could make how they could do it and like make each episode kind of its own thing with you know the with what they're working with. Yeah. I mean, that would be like next to impossible to do.
Okay. But yeah, before we send Jimmy TV off, do you have anything else to add?
Let's see what to do with all this stuff. It was pretty funny that Caitlin like really checked out that what's her face.
Yeah, no, that was.
I mean, it looked like Caitlin was like, "Hell, I'd hit it." That's what I wrote down, at least.
The Lady Talisa.
Yeah. She's a very good looking girl in the middle of a battlefield. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just see what else we got going on. I guess that's pretty much it. I mean, Theon's performance in the first 10 minutes was pretty good. Oh, that's what I wanted to talk about. I want to go back to Dagmar. We kind of
okay.
Left Dagmar out in the cold. He's obviously a stand-in kind of for somebody right now. Wouldn't you say?
I suppose.
I mean, someone else is supposed to be the voice in Theon's ear about doing all this bad shit.
Mm-hmm.
is it Na'vi the fairy?
It is. It is. Hey, listen.
Nailed it.
Theon's always pushing up seeing shit.
Oh, yeah, he's yeah, a composite character.
I'm curious as to see where they go with him, as a character. And then also with a lot of the book fans, I was thrilled to hear that Roose mentioned his bastard at Dreadfort, Lord Ramsay.
Yeah.
He loves mentioning his bastard, that's for sure.
He does. Like, oh,
don't even worry about it. My bastard's on it.
Yeah.
He's got this shit on lock.
He would love it. Do you guys mind Roose not talking in a whisper? I always really liked that. How Roose was supposed to be real fucking quiet.
Yeah, he's a real creepy dude.
Yeah, I kind of liked how he was always real quiet in the books.
I can't wait to see him get leeched. That's what I'm really looking for.
To me, Roose, when I imagine Roose, even with this incarnation on the TV show, I'll always imagine the six-fingered man from Princess Bride. Because he's got kind of that look.
He's got that hair, kind of thing.
Yeah, he's got the floofy hair and the mustache. He talks like really quietly all the time. And like, you know, the guy, you know, like he's torturing someone. And he's crying out and he says, interesting, you know, or whatever.
Right, kind of real creepy.
So I'll always kind of imagine him as Roose Bolton.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's pretty perfect.
Nice.
But so I guess I'm done here. All
right, well, we'll be talking to Jimmy TV next
or,
week for more later. Game of Thrones.
Even that Rangers overtime goal was pretty garbage.
I didn't see it.
Wasn't the six-fingered man Christopher Guest?
Yes. Yes, he was.
I thought so.
In any case, on to the Mad Men. I'm just gonna mention this right off the bat. Very rainy episode. Lots of rain.
Yes.
And I don't think we've gotten any rain so far in this season. So I feel like that's clearly some foreshadowing for some storms to come here.
Ooh, and I think it's also showing us the passage of time. It was the beginning of June, I believe, at the beginning of the season, and then a couple episodes ago. No, last episode. No, two episodes ago. I think it was September.
Yeah.
The guy said on the radio. So we're moving along pretty quickly in time through the fall.
That's how they like to do. They just kind of click along there.
Well, when did Revolver come out?
I don't know.
I'm on it.
If anyone had that information offhand, I'd be upset.
In any case, so we've got the rain going on. Clearly, some foreshadowing. Megan leaving the firm after last week's clear disappointment in her success after Peggy gives her that sort of pump-up speech at the end. I feel like this episode, again, furthered the whole marketing versus actual culture debate, or the whole true creativity,
autism.
Yes.
Come on down with Whittem.
Our artisticness, I guess, with what they do in the marketing. And I think the fact that it opened up with Ginsberg giving a pitch that featured, you know, a Beatles, that was supposed to feature like a Beatles song or a Beatles knockoff of Hard Day's Night, just shows that it's interesting that marketing is sort of going into this new realm where they're trying to integrate the culture of the time.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, Don kind of noted that when he was like, since when is music so important? It's like everybody wants this specific song.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, you know, they're moving away from creating jingles to just taking other art and smashing it into commercial art. It's
reappropriating it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're taking away almost the creativity of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to place in what's hot in pop culture, which is interesting, I feel like. Especially since Don seemed to kind of be...
Well, what's more effective today, do you guys think? It's like Apple's ads always has, you know, kind of current music or whatever.
Yeah, all ads, they're doing that now where it's not even... We've moved past even just taking a song that is popular and putting it into commercial. It's like they find a commercial that they find a song that they know is about to become popular. That's like moving its way up the indie scene.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're like, you know, people, when this song explodes, they'll associate us with that explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Now I completely forgot.
You were going to talk about the freecreditreport.com ban.
No, I could safely say I was not going to mention that.
Revolver came out on, I guess this might be in Britain, but August 5th, 1966.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, they said it was the new Beatles album or, you know, the newest one. So it's not like they needed – it's not like Megan had to go wait at the record store the very day. Right.
I'm just saying it's at least that – because you were saying, were we guessing that it was in the summer? It's at least the, you know, end of the summer.
Yeah.
It's past September, or it's in September at least in this episode.
Right.
Because when Don and Megan went up to that hotel or whatever, and they got in that fight, it was September.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
I remember what I was going to say now. I was going to say Don kind of created this whole thing where maybe not pop culture, but bringing culture into marketing campaigns with his glow coat ad there. The whole Western-themed the whole Western-themed commercial. So he kind of, I mean... It's not like he's the only one, clearly, but that was the first time that he was lauded as like a pioneer for the first time having like, you know, a story or a narrative in a commercial. And so
mm-hmm.
now it's kind of like they're pushing it even further and further and taking away the creative aspects of marketing and just doing spoofs and that sort of stuff. I mean, they had the spoof of, what's it called there? My Fair Lady or whatever, right? For the Pepsi.
Bye-bye, Bert.
Yeah, Bye-Bye Birdie.
Oh, yeah.
So they had that, too, as well. So it's interesting to see that all the marketing now is going towards trying to recreate or basically just hack, spoof this culture that's going on. So, and then, of course, Megan quitting the marketing agency, the advertising agency, to become an actor is yet another is another thing where it's like, marketing isn't, I feel like Weiner's trying to say marketing isn't really true creativity or whatever, as I've been saying in the past couple podcasts.
I was wondering where the other foot would drop on, or other shoe, with Don and Megan doing that pitch so well last week, and Megan getting so good at copywriting, and then, you know, finding out that she just doesn't want it. Even though she's great at it, it was a... I know, it was sad. It was sad for Don. I think he was, he kind of seemed very, like, little boyish to me in this episode with, I could see that he was sad, that he just seemed, like, sad that his, you know, like, oh, my girlfriend's not going to work with me anymore, like, that kind of, like, young feeling. about it.
Well, to me, it was kind of like he and Peggy had always had this really good work relationship where they bounced ideas off each other, and they were kind of like, I mean, maybe not finished each other's sentences, but, you know, they had that real solid work relationship. And I think he was hoping that he and Megan could have that as well. Because, you know, they worked, at least for that particular Cool Whip pitch, they were working so well with the whole thing. Not only that, but at the Heinz dinner as well. They were kind of like partners in crime almost. And I feel like Don was
really...
You could
see he was excited to have that again with her like they had at Heinz.
Yeah. So, and Don, I think, you know, it was interesting to see that they brought in Don and Peggy's relationship again this episode, where Peggy had basically been by herself on an island for the most part, besides getting random calls from Don.
Well, was he happy to have was he the reason why he's so upset is because he wants to hang out with his wife and do all this stuff, or is he worried that now they're not going to be as good as they were going to be? Like, was he excited about kicking ass, or was he more excited about hanging out?
I think that he is worried about what he is going to be now. I really think he's been trying very hard not to screw this relationship up. And I think that now that Megan, like when he comes home at night, Megan is not going to be there. I think that he's been keeping himself really busy with this routine of theirs. And so he hasn't really had as much time to even have his eye wander. And I don't know, I can see him being worried that he's going to go back to old Don now.
I mean, I could definitely see that as well. I think after the Heinz thing, Don's sort of excitement changed from, you know, basically being able to sexually harass his wife whenever he wanted in the office to actually being like, oh, wait a minute, she's good at this.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun to do. So I think his focus changed, and then of course
when you say it's fun to do, what do you mean?
You know, like it's fun to work with her, like actually work.
When you say work with her, what do you mean?
I mean actually do advertising stuff.
He's talking about finger blasting in his office.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. But you know, basically, you know, do pitches, create campaigns and stuff. I think he kind of.
I don't think he like spends a lot of time getting excited about creating campaigns. I think he gets more excited about, like, you know, being a badass.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that was he was just looking himself in the mirror and be like, oh my god, this is gonna be so fun. But I'm just saying that I think once he realized that Megan was good at it, he kind of saw that. You know, I think he kind of got at least a little jazzed up about it, at least being able to work with her on that sort of stuff. I mean, would old Don have ever done a pitch, you know, like one of those, a weird acting pitch in the office with anyone other than Megan? I mean, before he even met Megan, you know, the whole Cool Whip spiel. Would he have ever done any of that in the office?
No, yeah, you're right. He would not have.
And I mean, clearly it's because he loves Megan, but also because I think he actually was legitimately having fun doing it with Megan.
Yeah.
So. Or is the reason he's having fun with it because it's with her or because it's really good?
I think it's both. Like, I think it's both.
I would say it's mostly because it's really good.
Megan, I think it's with her because Megan knows him better than anyone has since his friend, the real Mrs. Draper, died. So he has to have opened up to her more than he has with anyone since then and feel more playful and, you know, like vulnerable and all that with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would agree. But yeah, well, clearly Weiner loves putting in symbols into his work. I think there was definitely one clear one in this episode.
Yeah.
I still don't know what it really means, so I'm going to put it out to you guys.
We talking about elevator shaft?
I'm talking about the
elevator
shaft.
Talking about that
shaft? Yeah, I'm talking about it.
We walked right into that.
Can you dig it?
To me, well, it's just like with Megan in the office, he knows exactly what's going to happen. They're going to do great. They're going to come up with awesome pitches. But when she goes down the elevator, when she disappears out of the office, he doesn't know what she's going to be doing. Like, and he's not thinking that like in a weird, crazy, obsessive way, but just the future's not as clear for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fear definitely looking down that shaft. That was a very Sopranos moment
mm-hmm.
that he had when he looked down there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was definitely a crazy happening. I get what you're trying to say. I like what you're saying, definitely how like the future is now muddled for both him and Megan. You know, not only is he worried about what she's going to be doing, but also he doesn't know what he'll be doing now, because he basically, I mean, as far as we know, he's basically changed his life, and we haven't seen him be truly creative since season 3. So, you know, now he doesn't know what the future holds, whereas before he always knew at least he would have Megan there to lean on and do all that sort of stuff. So,
was I the only one that was also like, Don, put your head back in, yeah, get out of the elevator because it's about to come down and take your head off?
Yeah, no, I was thinking that too. I was like, Don, you're looking down that shaft a little too much, haven't you
seen? Yeah.
You didn't even look up at all. There could be an elevator coming right at you.
And they were making elevator sounds too. It wasn't like it wasn't moving.
Do you said that you feel like we haven't seen him be creative since season 3. Do you not feel like he did good work last year?
Oh, this is season 5, my bad. I meant last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, season 4, my bad.
I was going to say, I felt like he had some pretty
basically,
big successes.
We haven't seen him be creative this season, is what I was trying to say. We haven't really seen him make a pitch or make an idea or anything. So, it should be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah.
Speaking of old creative Don, yet another episode where we're being reinforced that Peggy and Pete are basically becoming old Don, where Peggy is, of course, working late and getting drunk.
Oh, my God, Pete's a house. And have me busting up.
Yeah, and Pete going after his friend's wife there.
What a dirtbag.
Yeah.
He's such a tool. He's the biggest tool in the world.
It's true. I was getting on his side, and now he's so singularly focused, and he's so not willing to give up. It's really ridiculous. He lacks any suaveness that Don had. And
yeah.
He's just basically, I mean, I would not be surprised if he ends up raping someone.
I'd be surprised if he did that. Yeah, wait, what did he do with an au pair or something like that? What was that situation?
I don't know if it wasn't like physical, like pin you down rape, but it was rape. It was,
when was that? Give me the circumstances. I read that somewhere and I couldn't remember it.
I can't remember. It might have been like third or second season. His wife was out of town and he found that au pair, his neighbor's au pair crying in the hallway because she had stained one of their dresses, one of her
players'
dresses.
Right.
And so he took it to Joan.
At the department store there.
Yes.
She cleaned it up or whatever, or replaced
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
And he brought it back, expecting Sally on the side.
Yeah, he did. Oh, my God.
And then when she's like, no, he's like, okay, well, now you can't have this unless I have that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Which
probably
no one back then would call rape, but now it's rape.
Yeah,
it's something. It's something not good.
Is this whole affair thing, do you think it's going to keep on going on, or do you think it was just a once? I mean, clearly he's probably going to be real creepy about it, but do you think he's actually going to end up getting back up with her? Or?
I was wondering about that because she's not a small time actress. That was Alexis Bledel, whatever her name is.
Yeah,
Gilmore Girls. Gilmore I don't know. I could see her coming back.
I could see her making a few more appearances.
I mean, it was clear that she, I guess, enjoyed being loved on.
Oh yeah, she wanted.
It was also, I don't know. It was just Pete doing anything is just a bad time.
Well, it's interesting.
Picking up skis in Roger's office. And Roger's like, oh, and I got to see that.
That was hilarious. But what you were saying about Pete, you know, he's lost and he really is trying to become whatever he thought Don was. It's interesting that he chooses this girl because she was very much like a Betty Draper type character. She was acting the same, and she's kind of in the same situation where she's just really lost, and she's kind of just seemed like an imprisoned child in this relationship. And Pete couldn't even land a Betty, who is, you know, completely helpless and lost.
And complete nutcase.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Pete is definitely doing it up. And then, as we mentioned before, Megan quits, so Don has to do the pitch with Peggy. And they definitely had an old married couple fight there in front of, or I guess right after, Mr. Belding left,
yes.
left stage right. Mr. Belding might have been eating a little too much Cool Whip.
Belding really enjoying his own product.
Yes, yes. But I thought it was interesting. I mean, that sort of reinforced the whole Don and Peggy relationship being off, as well as I thought it was interesting that Peggy is more... I guess Peggy... Megan never really feels like a wife, you know? I guess they still might be in the honeymoon stage, but the relationship almost seems too good, Megan and Don's. So it's interesting to see Peggy sort of play the nagging wife.
You point out the negative about their relationship, but I also thought that there was a little bit of something positive there, that I liked that Peggy is now comfortable talking to Don the way that she did, mm-hmm. that she told him to shut up, and there wasn't, Don didn't mm-hmm. even have a moment of, I'm going to fight back with that, or like, fuck you, I'm your boss, or anything. I think he really views Peggy as an equal now, and as someone else who knows him really well. For her to just like call him on that and be like, you're not even mad at me, so shut up.
yeah, that was good.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely showed how close they had become, but I think, you know, it was still fairly negative in tone. I would wonder...
Yeah, their chemistry's off.
I wonder how Don would react if Megan basically did that, you know? Because they haven't really had a true fight. I mean, they've had some arguments or whatever, but they haven't had, like, a fight. So it would be interesting to see...
Two episodes ago, you left her? At the diner?
They didn't really deal with that, though. I'm saying a fight where they deal with each other.
I mean, what are you talking about?
She just left. That's all they did.
He left her, and then he, like, broke down the door of his own apartment and chased that bitch around.
Yeah, and then he ended up crying in her lap.
That is a fight.
Man.
They didn't fight each other.
What do you want?
I want to see them verbally spar, is what I'm saying.
Man, that's what they were doing. Like at the Howard Johnson's table, they were yelling at each other.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And then afterwards, they
talked about her parents, about speaking French, and about how it's allowed to work. And no, that's not a fight.
How many relationships have you been in?
It wasn't a Peggy type fight. I want a Peggy type fight. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I see. Like the suitcase.
I want Megan to be like, shut up, and then see what happens.
There's another fight that ended, that they had early in the season that ended with her on her knees.
Yeah, that ended a little differently.
That was a good fight.
Yeah, that ended very well for both parties.
Yeah. Anyway, we seem to be going to those moments a lot tonight. But I thought that it was really funny after Peggy and Don had that exchange when his reaction to her telling him to shut up was to go for his cigarettes, which is his defeat, usually in arguments. Mm-hmm. And then that woman saying, all of a sudden we realize that woman's still in the room, and she's like, you can't talk. That was a great joke.
Yeah, that was great. Maybe the biggest part of this episode, the biggest news, I don't know, for me it was at least, was the fact that they've been toying with it for seasons now. They actually got a Beatles song.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode, like, they actually got the rights to play a Beatles performed song, which I haven't seen any movie where that's happened.
That rarely ever happens.
At least recently. So, I mean, I thought that was maybe the biggest part of the whole thing for me, because they've been flirting with it for so long and actually obtaining the rights for a Beatles song. Because I literally thought that when he put that record on, it would just cut to credits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you never see a Beatles perform song on any shows.
No.
So to me, that was the biggest thing. And then, of course, him sort of turning it off after trying to listen to it, and him clearly still not getting the whole music, how big music and pop culture has become, and him just walking off with his drink into the room, I thought was very telling as well.
Yeah, it seemed like a moment of him trying to stop what it was that he was talking about before. This fact that now you can just take something that already is, you know, like a song that is already popular and just reappropriate for, you know, your commercial. I felt like that was him turning it off. And then it's starting up again during the credits is like kind of, you know, showing us like it's not going to stop. This is what's happening. And it's what they were doing right there by playing the song on the show.
Yeah. And not just the change in advertising, but just the flow of time in general. Because, yeah, like, he, you know, he's like, they're trying to figure out what song to get. And he's like, well, I'll just ask Megan. Megan always knows.
Yeah.
And so, here Megan brings him a song and he's like, oh, I'll check it out. And, clearly he doesn't think too much of it. And so is that him just kind of giving up? Is he like, all right, well, I tried to listen to it. I can't. I'm too old. Fuck it.
Yeah, I feel like it's just him being like, I've lost the pulse of people that buy things, basically. And he just, I mean, because clearly he was definitely not trying to.
If that's what he's thinking, that I've lost the pulse of what people are buying, then that's a huge scene
for the entire
series, not just like the episode or the season. If he thinks that he's lost it.
This is the first time that we actually see him sort of try to envelop himself in what's going on, like what's hot at the time, you know? I mean, he goes to the Rolling Stones concert, but we don't actually see him listen to any of the music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I thought it was interesting. I mean, it seemed like he actually tried to give it a go, and I think he just gave up and was like, I don't get it. I don't understand what the hell's going on. And I mean, that's been a theme throughout the entire season with him and Roger being like, what the hell's happened, you know? When is this going to get back to normal sort of thing, so.
Mm-hmm.
And they also did the nice little montage during the scene as well.
They need a montage.
Which they don't, I don't think they do too often, montages at the end of
show. Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
Not a whole lot.
So, and Megan acting it up. But, I just thought it was crazy that they actually played the Beatles song. It was definitely.
I know you did. I thought of you when they played it. Yeah. I was like, oh, man, Bagman's going to freak out.
Yeah, I literally jizzed my pants a little bit.
I know.
It was intense.
I think that's a good point to stop the podcast.
Yes, I would agree. Next week, as per usual, we'll come back at you guys. Little Game of Thrones, little Mad Men. We might end up doing a little half-season review for both this week. I guess we're a little past half for both of them, but we might be able to post a little something-something there up on the website. The website, of course, is in-the-bag2gs.com. Come by every day. We usually try to keep that shit updated. Hopefully, we'll have an Avengers review tomorrow or Wednesday. I know I personally will probably be seeing it tomorrow night, so I'll definitely post something. And I know Alan and Jake are writing a nice little journal. Are you writing a review or a journal of the proceedings, or?
We wanted to kind of go through our day of seeing all the Avengers movies and just highlight different things that happened.
Excellent.
During the day and little things that we noticed in the movies.
Excellent. So I'm very excited to read this. And just come by the website, check us out, and we will talk to you guys later.
No baggage fees.
Cool with you.